Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon if you're on the East Coast. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the entertainment world. Usually my guests are musicians or authors. Today, though, my guest is neither of those. He is a retired Hollywood stuntman. You might not recognize his name, but I can assure you that if you have watched any of the classic Western movies from the 50s or 60s, you've seen him in action. It is my great pleasure to welcome Jack Young, otherwise known as Blackjack Young, to the program. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning to you, Simon.
I was doing some math earlier this morning. You're 85 years young.
Yuck.
You've done just about everything under the sun in Hollywood. So I calculate that leaves us about 25 seconds of airtime for each year. So you're going to have to talk quick.
I'm okay.
As I recall, you were born somewhere on the East Coast. Where did you come from?
Well, I was born in a little town called Fincastle in Virginia, just outside of Roanoke, Virginia. And when I was three, my family moved to a town called Covington, Virginia, and which was supported by the Westvaco paper mill. And if you didn't work for the paper mill, you worked for some place supporting it. It's one of those country store things.
Right. What line of work was your father in?
Well, he was a coal miner in West Virginia for a long time. And by the time I came along, he was working in sawmills. And when I left home, he was working for the school system as a carpenter.
Oh, okay. Now, as I understand it, World War II got in the way of your career. You signed on with the Navy. What did you do during World War II?
Well, I'd run off from home when I was 14, and I was living in Richmond, Virginia, and the war came along, and I saw all these bell-bottom trousers on sailors with a gal on each arm, and I thought, boy, that's for me. So I called home and asked my dad to sign the papers because I was too young, and he did, and I did, and I went in the Navy, and I ended up in UDT, Underwater Demolition Teams, and a frogman, I guess they call them SEALs today, but in World War II, we were frogmen.
And I'm pretty certain I read somewhere that you did over 100 missions?
106.
Wow. I'm guessing that being a Navy frogman in World War II wasn't exactly the safest of jobs you could have selected.
Let's put it this way, Simon. I started as a seaman second. I went from a seaman second to a seaman first, to a coxswain, to a bosun second, to a bosun first, and never took a test. Somebody got in front of me and they just said, "Put another stripe on, young."
Oh, man. You must have lost a lot of friends and acquaintances in that line of work.
Didn't make friends. You didn't do that. They were They were work buddies, and that was it. You got too friendly with a guy, and you'd get emotional, and you couldn't do that. So, unfortunately, that's the way it was.
Now, after World War II, you obviously came back to Virginia. But
no.
No, you didn't.
No.
Oh.
No, I got out of the Navy in Miami, and I had a young wife that I had married earlier in Galveston, Texas, and I went there and got rid of that deal. Then I went on to Hollywood. I wanted to be an actor. I had the big ears. I thought I could be another Clark Gable. Well, one of them's still big. The other one's been chopped up by cancer, but that's what I thought. Boy, was I mistaken.
Right. So, I mean, you basically just woke up one morning and said, I know, I'm going to head to Hollywood and fame and fortune. Is that pretty much the way it worked?
Pretty much.
All right. So you arrive in Hollywood. Now, I know a few folks in the Hollywood scene. And it's pretty much a closed-in society.
Boy, was it ever. Yes, sir.
Right. I mean, you know, how did you get started?
Well, I tried and tried and tried to find somebody that would represent me or do whatever. I couldn't do it. So I had to get in somehow or the other, so I got involved being an extra. I remember on March 20th, 1947, I got called to go in to Paramount Studios to work as an extra on a movie. I have no idea what that movie was because I was only there a week or so. And but once you get a pass to get on a lot in those days, they would let you on any lot because things weren't as tight then as they are now. And I worked there about a week and a half or so, and one of the guys said, hey, Jack, didn't you used to do water stuff? And I said, yeah, in the Navy. He said, they're doing a water picture over at Fox. Well, I said, goodbye. I jumped in my old Studebaker and took off. Went to Fox and got in touch with a guy, to make a long story short, and told him how bad they were making decisions, told him what to do and how to do it with water stuff. It worked. They put me to work, and that's the way it started.
All right. Now, I recall talking to you. It was a conversation we had a couple of months ago. The L.A. Or Hollywood scene was a lot different back then. And so I seem to recall you saying that to get from the lot you were on to the lot where they were making the water movie, and you had to drive down a dirt road. I believe that.
No, it was a gravel, pea gravel, about 7 miles through the country to get to Fox Ranch. The name of that street was Pico. Today it's in the middle of the city, obviously. But it was truly Hollywood in those days, Simon. There was no smog. Actors were huge celluloid giants. It was a great time, a great time to be in that city.
Yeah, I have to admit, when you first mentioned that to me, I just laughed and laughed for hours. I've never lived in L.A., but I have spent an enormous amount of time there. The idea of Pico, you know, being this gravel road, it just blows my mind.
Well, that's what it was. It's like Vegas. You know, Vegas, you know, as those days, they only had three or four casinos. You know, I remember the Sands Hotel, and I used to go to a lot. There wasn't anything else there much. But things That's what I'm talking about, 1947, man.
Right. Yeah, that was a while ago. You did this Frogman deal, but let's face it, there weren't many opportunities for Frogman movies in Hollywood in the late 40s. So you managed to get into Westerns. How on earth did you do that?
Well, I went on a picture. Well, first of all, the first movie I got, I finally landed a movie called The Street with No Name. It came out in 48. It was a contemporary movie. I didn't do much on it. Primarily I stood in, for one of the guys and the director. I remember this guy, Bill Kegley, was really a terrific guy, and he helped me a lot, taught me a lot. I got my SAG card on that thing, and I ran around asking everybody in the world what they did and why they did it, and it was a genuine pest. We shot it at the FBI Academy in Quantico. But then I met some other guys along the way because I was always going into places and finding out who was who and what was what. And then I got on a movie called Trail to Laredo, and I was in hog heaven because I had watched these guys, Charles Start, Hoot Gibson, Ken Maynard, and all those guys in my young youth days in movies. And here I was working on a movie set with these guys, and I was like a stargazing kid, you know? But anyway, that got me started, and I met a lot of people. Then I later met Chuck Roberson, who later became John Wayne's double, and he called me his little bitty buddy, and we became friends, and that guy got me so much work, it wasn't funny.
Now,
I mean to take over your program here.
Well, I have to ask you this. You grew up in Virginia, and don't get me wrong, but I don't recall there being much, Wild West horsemanship coming out of Virginia. Were you a horseman?
No. The only horse I'd ever ridden was the old plug on the farm where somebody led it, and me as 7 or 8 years old sitting on the top of it. No, I didn't care much for horses. I don't know why. They just always seemed like a piece of meat that might kill you. But anyway, I do remember that the first saddle fall I had to do, they have a thing called a saddle fall where the horse is running and you get shot and you're out of the saddle. Or the horse fall is where they shoot you and you and the horse both go down. So they asked me to do a saddle fall, and I said, okay, that's great. They had me a sand pit where I could land and not hurt myself too bad. I went to get on the horse, and unfortunately, I didn't know that the etiquette part was to get on the left side. I'm trying to get on the right side. The wrangler looked at me, said, do you know what you're doing? I said, no, just get me on this thing, slap it on the ass, and let me go, and I'll do the rest. So when I bailed off of that thing, I missed that pit by 30 feet and bounced like a rubber ball. But I jumped up and said, you want me to do it again? No.
I mean, that is a fine example of pure grit and determination, I would
Well,
say.
After that, Simon, a bunch of us, we'd go out to Corriganville, which was a great Western town built by a guy named Crash Corrigan in those days, long gone now. And we practice, and they'd teach me, and I learned really fast and quick because I wanted to do that more than anything in the world, you know. So that's the way it started.
Now, You ended up appearing in many, many well-known movies. I'm going to start with one movie that isn't maybe as famous as the rest, but it's got a unique story. You were involved with Conqueror, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that one.
Now, this was financed by Howard Hughes, and the shooting of most of it was on location in Utah. Can't remember exactly where. But
George, the Escalante Valley there.
And that was also the site of many A-bomb tests, but no one involved was informed of this at the time.
Howard Hughes knew about it, that rat Fink. He knew about it, but he didn't tell Dick Powell or any of the rest of the people.
Right. I was doing some research for another project. Of the 200-plus people involved with the on-location shooting, within 10 years, something like 60 of them had contracted some kind of cancer.
Well, I've had, I don't know that it was caused by that, of course, years later, but I've had four attacks of cancer in various things. In 1972, I lost a piece of my shoulder to cancer, but I always kind of figured that was caused by stunt work because I had this huge calcium deposit upon my shoulder that had developed from having my shoulder broken or pulled out of the socket, and and it turned to mush and turned out to be cancer. But that was probably the worst case that I'd had. But I don't know if that was, well, that wasn't too long afterwards, but who knows. Now, we met a guy, you know the guy. We met a guy on Facebook that wrote this book called To Kill the Duke. It was a wonderful, wonderful book. And God bless him, he sent me a proof copy. And I read it, and I laughed all the way through it because knowing the stories as I do, of course, he made up most of the stuff. And but it's the first time I'd ever read a book about real people that was fiction. And, boy, did it tell the story. He talked about that sand skiing and all that stuff. I wish we'd have thought about that when we were there.
The gentleman that Jack's referring to is another one of my good friends, Sam Moffey. I'm sure Sam will listen into this broadcast. So, Sam, it's a shout-out to you. The book, To Kill the Duke, is actually a very fun read. Yes, you're right. It's completely fictional, yet it's not.
That is hard to figure out, isn't it?
Right, yeah. He based it around some facts.
They actually say that they think that Stalin actually wanted to kill the Duke. Mm-hmm. That was kind of funny.
Oh, no, that bit was factual.
No.
Okay, well, you obviously had a great deal of fun doing stunts in the early days, but there was one movie that basically stopped you in your tracks. And it's possibly one of the most famous movies of the era. And I have no idea how many times it's been shown on TV over the years. It's called The Alamo. What happened in The Alamo?
Well, ouch. It hurts to thinking about it. On the we did a lot of stunt work in The Alamo, of course, and one day we'd be Crockett men and have put beards on us and squirrel skin raccoon caps, and we'd shoot and shoot and shoot. And the next day we'd be getting shot by the same people we shot. Weird. But on the 83rd day, we did this stunt, second unit, 13 of us dressed as Mexicans. We all charged the Alamo, going over a bombed out piece. And we couldn't practice that. I mean, how do you practice a thing like that? You don't. So we'd all gather out there and we'd talk about it after hours, and we'd say, okay, I'll go here and you go there, and I'll try to do this and you try to do that. And when we did the stunt, I reined a beat too fast and I kicked my horse in the nose, and normally she'd stagger and go down. I'd get my foot out of the stirrup and roll. Didn't happen. Went down like a shot, trapped my foot, and then there was 12 other animals on top of me all trying to get up. And that was the last thing I remember.
Ouch. How much was broken?
Well, they said probably 60% of my bones were either broken or fractured. I had some compound fractures. And I guess what they told me later, the doctor said, it evidently I probably got kicked in the head first, which is why I'm a duh, nowadays. And which probably saved my life, because after that I was like a rag doll. And Chuck Roberson said, I think we should have picked him up with a shovel.
Ooh, that's a bit unkind.
We always kidded each other like that, but this was well after. They Bat Jack Productions paid all my bills, kept me on the payroll for the whole time, took good care of me. So what can I say? I did. I was doing what I loved to do.
How long were you out of commission?
Oh, about 6 months. Went back before I should, but I did anyway, so...
Okay.
It's all I knew, Simon.
Right.
I didn't finish school. I ran off from home. The only thing I knew how to do was that stunt work.
I mean, this is where I get that uh-oh moment. You know, you've cheated death, and what do? You go right back and do it again.
Well, I didn't know anything else. I didn't know what else to do. Hey, you know, I figured I beat it that time. I can do it some more. I guess
okay.
What really got me thinking about it, though, it wasn't fun anymore, though. I mean, even a simple ground fall hurt, especially off a horse. It hurt. It wasn't, you know, you don't get over a thing like that. And but I just kept working, and I remember... My agent sent me to a segment of How the West Was Won, the movie, not the TV series. And we were up in Superior, Arizona, and doing the train stuff. And I was sitting up there, and one of my best friends, who was a golfing buddy of mine, Bob Morgan, had this stunt where he's running across the logs, and the logs gave out, and it threw him under the train, chopped off a leg, ruined his manhood, knocked out an eye. And I'm sitting up there, and we're running to him. I'm thinking, what the devil am I doing here? This is crazy. I'm going to end up being some 80-year-old elevator operator or something, you know.
Wow.
So then I started. I started thinking, how can I get out of this? And then I came to Old Tucson to do another movie. I'd been here several times because I live in Tucson. And we were doing a picture called McClintock. I met Bob Shelton, who was the entrepreneur of Old Tucson. And I talked him into letting me come to work for him doing the gunfights on the street because I said, you know, that roof don't move. I can fall off that roof. Ever getting back on another horse as long as I live. And I didn't.
In total, just a wild guess, how many movies did you do stunts for?
My IMDb page lists, I think, 74. But there was more than that because a lot of them they can't verify. And if they can't verify it, they won't put it on. But, yeah, probably close to 100.
Wow. You've worked with many big names. And I realize that as a stuntman, you probably didn't have a great deal of interaction with the with the big names. But do you have a favorite that you like to work with?
Clark Gable.
Okay, I'm going to ask why.
Well, Clark Gable, I looked a lot like him in my young years. And remember I said earlier that when I got out of the Navy, I had the big ears. I wanted to be another Clark Gable.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the man. He was most down-to-earth, Cuban, celluloid giant you would ever want to meet. I doubled him in 5 movies. I doubled him in his last movie, Misfits. And we knew he was on his way out, although no one knew it. No one else knew it. I remember when I was going to be, my agent called me and said, they want you to double Gable in this movie, but they want to advertise that he's doing his own stunts. Does that bother you? I said, well, no, why should it? I'm not supposed to be recognized anyway. Just pay me. That's all I care about. But we did. It was fading during the making of that movie up in Utah or wherever it was. And hang on. Out of Reno. And anyway, he was truly a gentleman. A lot of times he'd invite me into his room to have a drink. He was a good friend, and there's not a lot of guys that I would say that about that I work with. S.R.J. Wagner was the only other movie actor that I really considered a personal friend.
You moved on from stunts to other missions. In fact, you mentioned your involvement with Old Tucson Studios, but you've done more. You location manager, producer, etc. What sort of projects have you worked on?
Well, when I joined Old Tucson, I told Shelton I'd go to work for him. When Andy McLaughlin wrapped McClintock, I flew back to L.A., packed my gear, got in my old car and took off and came here and moved here to Tucson. And I went to work. I was on the street for 2 years for Bob Shelton as the marshal of the street. I hired guys, trained them, had professional stuntmen doing. There's a whole lot of stories there that I won't get involved in. I went up the ladder. I told Bob I want to do more than just do stunts. I've been doing that for too many years. So he suggested I go audit some courses at the University of Arizona, which I did. And I audited courses like marketing and public relations and trying to train myself to become better in corporate management. And I went up the ladder at Old Tucson in a 12-year period, finally got to be the top dog next to Shelton. I walked in one day and said, "Are you ever going to retire?" And he said, "No, I'm still young." I said, "Well, here's my two-week notice. I'm out of here." So I went out and started my own little company, and that's the way that beginning started. I started handling extras for movies and doing payroll, and then I got involved in location management, which was my favorite behind the camera job, because as a location manager, as long as you did your job, nobody asked you where you were, what you were doing, why you were there. You reported only to the production manager for your check and the director for his okay. And that's what I love to do. I did some pretty big movies, Pursuit of D.B. Cooper. Well, we shot half in Jackson Hole and half here in Tucson. The Executioner's Song was one of my favorites, based on a true story about Gary Gilmore, who actually killed a couple of Mormons up in Provo, Utah, and demanded to be shot after they caught him and stuff like that. On that movie, I had about 65 to 70% of the real locations that Gary Gilmore actually was at. Tommy Lee Jones played him in the movie. That was one of my favorites.
Weren't you also involved in a situation where you needed to get a rodeo crowd, clearly you couldn't pay everyone, and so you held some kind of lottery or something?
Well, that's a fun one. Sidney Poitier came to town to do Stir Crazy, a great movie.
Oh, indeed.
And,
Stir Crazy is a fabulous movie.
Yes, yes. Well, anyway, there were scenes at the rodeo grounds. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Got allergies. And Sidney said, "Jack, I need 3,000 people there. But we can't afford to pay them all." He said, "We can pay about 300, which we can move around. But the rest, we need to get somehow or the other. I mean, at $75 a day, 3,000 times that is a lot of money." And so I sat down and worked on it and figured it out. And finally went back to the production manager. I said, "Okay, here's my budget, $40,000. He said, "How in the hell are you going to guarantee me 3,000 people for $40,000? I said, don't worry about it. That's my job." And so what I did is I had a whole bunch of pamphlets made up. I went to the newspaper and told them, "I got a story for you." And they put it in a paper that we were having big giveaways, and they got to see the stars in action and come out and blah, 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 blah. So at 10 o'clock on the morning that we had these, I must have had about 6,000 to start with. And at 10 o'clock, I got on the horn and gave away a VCR. Well, that's big stuff back in, those days. And then after lunch, we did feed them hot dogs and a Coke. After lunch, I gave away a huge television set. And then by the time we wrapped the day, I still had probably 2,500 people there. And I gave away a car.
It's the best con job I've ever heard.
Well, it's not a con job. I mean, the people got what they wanted. They got something to eat and a chance to win some great prizes and to see a lot of action. As the day goes along, it kept going and leaving, some of them, you know, obviously, but it was a great day. I got a big pat on the back by Sidney Poitier.
Oh, bad. In fact, I'll bet your telephone was ringing off the hook after that.
Well, I never lacked for work. There's a piece of sad business going on here in Arizona now, and maybe I shouldn't bring this up, but I'm going to anyway. We've been trying to put through a tax proposal for a long time, and not me, but the people, powers to be, in order to give tax breaks to the movie people that come in, like they do in Canada and like they do in New Mexico and all the other great states around. And I understand that they turned it down. It's too bad because, for instance, over in New Mexico, right now they're filming The Lone Ranger. Johnny Depp playing Tonto. Can you believe that?
Not really.
their budget is $215 million. And about 25% of that will be left in the state of New Mexico. Anyway, that's too bad. But I've had my time in the business. But I feel sorry for all these folks that are crew members and here in this area and Phoenix that need to work and can't anymore.
It bothers me a great deal. The movie business does represent a great deal of money into the local coffers.
Listen, Simon, they come in here with a crew of people. They fill up hotels. They buy meals at the restaurants. They buy clothes. They do this. They hire crews. And all they do is take away a bunch of celluloid. Well, it's not even celluloid anymore. It's this new techniques they have, but that's all they do. They take their movie, and they go home, and they leave all that money. And being a location manager, believe me, I made sure that they left the place in better shape than they found it.
Right. I know you've told me great stories of proving exactly that. You know, you go somewhere, you put roads in, you put utilities in. Life is better than it was before.
And absolutely.
Yeah. So,
sorry, I shouldn't have got off on that particular tangent. But it just came down recently, and it bothered me.
Oh, it's an important tangent. It really is. You know, people don't realize just how much money can be realized from having a movie shot in their town.
Well, old Tucson, all during the years that I was out there and even afterwards until it burned down in 95, old Tucson, I used to tell people, you know, of 100%, 85% of the people are tourists. But those 85, they come to see the 15, which is the John Waynes and the Clint Eastwoods, and those people walk where they walked and walk in their footsteps and see where they filmed and what they did. And actually, when we'd film a movie, they could come out and watch. We'd keep them back behind ropes and all, but they could watch the actors and watch what was going on. And it was a tremendous thing that probably will never happen again.
I have to admit that I've only been on a couple of movie lots, but it is magic. Sure, you can go to Universal in Hollywood and take the tour, and it's all fabulous. But nothing quite beats watching the real thing.
Well, you're right there. It's I miss it every day, Simon. I miss working. I miss being around the people that I used to love. Not a lot of people in the world have an opportunity to live their lives doing what they really love like I have. So a lot of guys would give a lot to live my life.
You mentioned that Old Tucson burnt down in, I think you said, 95. What happened? And, you know, have they rebuilt it?
Well, I say it burned down. About 60 or 65, maybe 70% of it burned. The soundstage burned, which was terrible. Because even when people came here to do pictures of today, they still use the soundstage for sets. I mean, like when we did Cannonball Run 2, I had sets built on that soundstage back in 83. And but I guess they did, the powers to be at that point, by that time Shelton was gone, and they just didn't want to spend the money to put it back, so they built it back a different way, and it's not the same, nor will it ever be the same as it was at one time.
I know that you're a big fan of the movies. In fact, I seem to recall you telling me that you and a friend go to the theater most Wednesday afternoons.
Absolutely. I love it. My old pal of mine, he's just like a kid. He's only 81. And but we get together every Wednesday. I'm single. I've been single for 30 years and live alone. But he's married. But we get together every Wednesday, go have a lunch and a movie, and we look forward to that every week. And but I love the movies. I have over 600 DVDs. I have Netflix, and I've ordered and found and scraped and gotten practically every movie that I ever worked in, especially doing stunts, from The Street with No Name all the way up to Rio Lobo, and a lot in between.
Okay, but here's my big question. Today's movies have all sorts of special effects and stunts in them. You must look at it and go, it was different in my day.
Well, yeah, and all due to the respect of the guys that do this stuff nowadays, I guess it's called progress. But being hung on a wire in front of a green screen doesn't tell me much. Since when Tom Cruise in the latest Mission Impossible is running down the side of that building, he's hanging on a wire in front of a green screen working his legs.
Right.
Everything else is put in behind him. No, it's not the same. They do, now, okay, they flip guys, put them on a wire, and they pull them and jerk them and flip them around and stuff like that. Some of the stuff is good. We saw a movie just 2 days ago called Safe, with one of my favorite of all time action actors, Jason Statham. And boy, I never saw so much action in my life. And a lot of it was done without the green screen, I could tell. And so I appreciate it when I see stuff like that happen.
Jack, we're just about to lose our live listeners. So I really, really want to thank you for talking to me today. It's been delightful.
I thought we had 3 or 4 hours.
Are you ever going to climb, well, I'll say climb back in the saddle, but I don't mean that. You know, I mean, Will you ever come out of retirement and do something again in the movie business?
The only way I would do that, Simon, since I've had prostate cancer, I don't have the energy that I once had, but I've written a script, a Western script called Sunset at Ironwater Flats. If I could ever get that, then I would work again. Otherwise, I'll give it all to my son.
And let's talk about your son. He made a delightful 6-minute documentary about you. So a big shout out to Cody Young. Cody, you did a fabulous job. Did you like his work?
Oh, I loved it. He's my son, my eyeballs, my everything, you know. And the only thing I told him was, don't ever do stunts. Don't do stunts. Do anything else in the movie business, but don't do stunts.
Jack, the producer is whining in my ear.
All right.
I do want to thank you. And I didn't even touch on half the questions I had for you.
I'm sorry I talk too much sometimes.
Nah, it just means we'll do this again.
Anytime.
Sometime in the not-too-distant future.
You've become a good friend, Simon. I really appreciate the things that you've said about me and the articles you've written. I appreciate so very much.
It's all my pleasure. Jack, thank you. And there's one question that I'll keep for next time, and that is
okay.
How you got the nickname Blackjack. I know the answer, but the listeners don't. So, you know, just like a soap opera, I'm going to leave them hanging.
Okay, pal, as we say in the West, adios, amigo.
Adios, amigo, to you. And we will talk again soon. Till next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe day. And we'll be back soon. Till then, goodbye.